Calling all small firm architects, it's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast, it's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Ko Manaj, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. Great to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you here. I'm really excited about having this conversation about your firm, Reed. I've been looking at it and seeing the types of work that you do, and it's super interesting. And so I wanted to bring you on the podcast and just share what you're doing, and then maybe talk about how you started the firm and where you are now, and maybe where you're planning on taking it in the future. So I'm looking forward to this conversation.
That sounds good. I'm glad you're
All right, let me the
firm this way. Yeah.
Let me introduce you, and then we'll jump right into that. Ko Manaj is a French multidisciplinary architect based among the cities of New York and Miami and Paris. He founded his own practice, Reed, in 2017, championing projects that foster an international relationship between the individual and the built environment, exploring architecture as a medium for ideation and communication, facilitating growth and community. Ko, I want to learn more about your practice. I want to understand Reed. I also want to understand the origin of the name Reed. It's written R-E-A-D. So I want to understand the whole origin of the name, and then we'll talk about your firm. Before we do that, though, I want to know more about you. I want to know more about you as an architect. I want to know your origin story. Where did you discover your passion for architecture? Who inspired you, or what inspired you way back when you decided to become an architect? Share that story from that point to where you are now.
Cool. Okay. I'm trying to not go too far back, but just
you can go back as far as you want. Lots of architects go all the way back.
Okay. Let's go then. Like, thanks for asking the question. So, I was living in Paris, pretty much until I was, part Switzerland, but like I moved in Paris when I was 13, like graduated from high school at 18 years old in Paris. And at that time, I was in a scientific major. I went to first year of a medicine school. That's in 6th arrondissement of Paris. And like next to that medical school is actually like the Beaux-Arts School of Paris. And I was going to go and grab lunch there every day, because it's actually this very nice courtyard and just like, and you know, I've always been really interested. Actually, I really like the biology aspect of the medical school. I like to understand how the body works and like the cells and how to communicate and like all the interactions between different elements. So I always liked his story a lot as well. Like, you know, like as a student, I like to understand, you know, like where we are now and really, and but like what brought us to this situation and like, you know, just like a little bit more context, you know, like I like to learn about the context and how things work. So it didn't really work out on the first medical year. Like I wasn't too much into it. But I was discussing with some of the artists at the Beaux-Arts at lunch, you know, they were like I was going around, I was seeing them like the paintings and the sculpting and just like, it's a little bit of like a free will word, you know, like everybody had their own insights. And so I thought it was really fascinating. And at the same time, I also had a friend who was studying. He moved from one of my friends from Paris to London to study at the AA school, Architectural Association. And he was telling me all about the project he was doing. And it was like, it sounded like really fascinating. And at some point I was like, well, maybe what I was looking into medicine, you know, like that sounds like maybe I can find it in architecture. Like I learned that there was a school of architecture on the Beaux-Arts, which is not part of the Beaux-Arts school anymore. It's separated, but it was still on the site of the Beaux-Arts. So it's still surrounded by the artists and everything. So that was the beginning of it. I didn't know much more about it. Like at that point, I was like, that sounds great. It sounds more interesting. I know the place is right there. So like I started on my next year in architecture. And I think like, you know, again, like I started to read about the history of architecture and like the same thing I would do like about general things and just really got into it. I think what was interesting here is like, to me, like it's a, you know, the architecture, what is great is like you can study so many things through it. Like it's like you kind of confront your view of the world through the project, you know, like you express what you even discover, like you're like, oh, I never knew like I would do a project about this. And you learn things about yourself. So it's a little bit of a self-discovery journey. And then as you learn the tools, like you start to understand how like you can broaden up a little bit the discussion as well, like through the projects. And also like some people like do even very conceptual things that like are grounded in architecture, but that maybe are not considered architecture, but like really can affect a lot of people. And same subject, you know, like history, sociology, different things. So, like, I found the field really, really broad, and enough of, you know, a playground to go like a lot of directions for sure. So I, you know, as I was getting a little bit more geared up there, my third year, I've been able to go to Berlin for 1 year as an exchange student. And that really blew my mind. Like, the school, the Universität der Kunst, the local Beaux-Arts school in Berlin, had like, you know, as much as like in France, like the school was about really project based, like that was a lot more theoretical. It was more urban. It was more about ideas. And actually, like, weirdly, like, because I was in the Beaux-Arts school in Paris, like, but there was a lot more arts in it too. So that, like, I came back and I actually wanted to stay there, but I ended up coming back to Paris to do my last year in the degree, and like really wanted to keep exploring more this way. I'd be like, okay, it's about projects, about more things. I was really interested about the urban aspects. And you know, like just like Paris is a cool city, but like the taste of like going to Berlin and come back, I kind of wanted to get away again. So I graduated with a more urban project, and then I did an internship at a firm called AS, the architecture studio. There's a firm who did the Arab Institute in Paris with Jean Nouvel at that time. Like they were all linked and then like departed ways. But they're a fairly big firm. And actually like they had, they told me like, look, like just like we're looking for people to go to our team in China, in Shanghai. Actually, like, it's also because I visited there, like, during my last year, and I thought it was interesting, and they told me, like, you can go there if you want. So my first job was directly in Shanghai, And then I worked there like a year and a half, which was great. And I started like, we were doing larger scale and like really fast paced. And not like, I think that Chinese architects have always been good, but I maybe even more so now. I think at that time they were looking for foreign firms to bring a different sense of design, while now like they really want to grow it in-house, like with their own knowledge, like Chinese architect, like trained, like that do amazing design. You can see it all over the web. But at that time it was a little different, where they were like, you know, it was 2007. They were looking for a little bit more exterior inside, I think. And so as a European moving there, like I started to, I don't know, manage little projects very quickly and things like that. So like that was exciting. But we were doing only concept design. And then like it was handed off to more like Chinese, executive, or like firms that would execute the projects. Yeah. You know, after a year and a half, you didn't build anything. Like it's a lot of paper things. So I was like yeah, maybe we need to do something else. So I went back. And that was a bad move, because it was 2008, and I never realized how bad the financial crisis would be and how like the impact on everything that it would have. So I went to London at that time, and I interviewed with quite a few cool artists, like David Ajayi, like David Chipperfield, I had the follow-up conversation with David Ajayi, like office, but as you get there, like all the projects were crumbling down and people are like, look, we just fired half of the office. Like right. There's nothing here. You know, so.
And how old were you at that point?
I was 23, 24.
Yeah.
Just like 20. Yeah. So, that was the first time I did many portfolios. I think I did like 100, 150, something like that, and sent it all around. And that was a good learning experience too. But so like I started to apply. I didn't want to go back to Paris. So I started to apply and like I got accepted at Columbia University, which was the beginning of my US adventure. So like I don't think I would be here in the US without all this. And so I did the urban design degree there, which was almost like participatory urbanism. You know, like I thought it would be more planning and stuff and more like formal, but it was actually a lot more about policies and like everything around the architecture. And I discovered a completely different aspect of what sculpts the city there. So like that was really interesting. But even when I graduated at Columbia in 2010, like from the degree, there was still no jobs in New York. So I did like assistant to a teacher called Mario Gooden at Columbia University. Like actually, like he's in charge of the advanced master program now. That's great. Like just did some little video for teachers, like a lot of different things for 1 year. And finally, through friends. Friends that I made at Columbia University, like they were like, oh, like there's this new firm, like you know, like we're a little small, but like we're looking for people. So I interviewed with Aaron Chen at ODA New York, which is now like more known. But I think we're like 10 or like I think we were 12. Like there were 12 people at the office. So the office was about 5 or 6 years old, something like that. Starting to have like better projects, but like they got hit by I think they grew and like they got hit by the financial crisis as well. So like they sort of like they were like on the regrow path. And so like, you know, like I was happy to stay in New York at that time. Like, so I was like, look, like all the urban things, like it's great, but just like there's a spot in architecture here. Like, I really like what those guys are doing. So. So I stayed 5 years at ODA New York. And we grew, I still say we, but like, we're 13, and then like in 3 years, like the office became like 85 or 90 people. So I both experienced a smaller office and what it is to almost grow a little fast, you know,
right.
And just see like that, but, you know, like thanks to that, just like they needed some of the first people, the first 12 people, even if it's like already like quite a bit of people, to like grow a little bit with the office. So I've been able to be project architect. I was in charge of a few facades, you know, like the condominiums, like you know, like between 60 and 100,000 square feet. Like I've been able to do full project from beginning to the end on a project that is called the Flynn in Chelsea. Like it took 4.5 years, and I was doing like the other projects at the same time. So, but it was great. I got a lot of training in facade there, which I really enjoyed detailing actually. And I discovered how to do CA, you know, like, so. And I think after 5 years, you know, like I was sort of wrapping the loop of all those projects. And so like, they were like, look, like here's the next round of project. I was like, well, either I launch again into it. And I know I'm going to take like 3 years in, you know, like another 3 years, or I do something else. At that time, actually, I met my wife, who's an interior designer. She's called Megan Grell. She's doing high-end interior design, but she started a couple of years before I met her. She's friends of people that I met in Shanghai. So like they just followed us. Right. And then they were like, oh, like you should meet that, you know, like you should meet that lady. Like she's starting her office. Like, and then she was operating from her living room with like a couple of interns, you know, like just like she had like planning experience, but like doing more like interior design, pure interior design. That's what, like, she worked at Narian Hu in Shanghai, and she inspired me. Like, just like I was like, wow, like, you can actually do it, you know. It's like, and like she was like, yeah, like just like, look, like just come and work from the living room too if you want, like, and just like, you know, like sometimes like didn't like this person is not so busy if you want to do things. So that was the jump. Like I had no projects, I didn't know, like, just, you know, but I was like, look, like this, feel like it's the right time. Like it's inspiring, yeah, to see you doing.
So no money, no experience, no clients. Just this sounds right. This feels good. Let's go do it.
Yeah, and I think I was, yeah, definitely. Like that was like, let's try something.
And
like,
what year is that?
That was 2017. Yeah. That was the summer 2017. Yeah, just like, you know, I started by helping her a little bit because she was starting to have projects that was going a little bit beyond the scope of interior design. So like I was trying to organize a little bit things. Like, you know, like she was getting some, you know, like the typical building review that you don't expect. And like they have the 3-page list of technical things when like you want to renovate the bathroom. And, you know, a little bit like that, like she got, like I was more like, also, I was a little bit architect of record for her, like for a little while. And then, well, from the moment I got my license, which was like 1 year after, like in the beginning, it was more like helping her, like in organizing drawings and interns and things like that. And we're trying to do the occasional competition as well, like, you know, at the office. So, but yeah, it's been a trip because, from the moment you're at the big firm and like, and, you know, like everybody is at experiences, like, you know, just like can tell me that it's very different to work with a firm that is 90 people to starting as a one person.
Yeah.
You know, like the scale of the project is different. All your consultants, you cannot call them because they're doing bigger projects. So like, it's like everybody you met to a certain extent is not fully relevant to what you're going to do now. And actually, like some people I met through my ODE career, I connect with them now that like we grew back in scale a little bit. So it comes back around.
Yeah.
But I felt on that end like much later. And so, but you know, like I think that was a great support to have my wife be able to also like bring me some projects like that, and me like to be able to help on those like apartment renovations and things. And I learned a lot through those projects too. You know, like it's one thing to draw a design. It's another thing to have to draw a plumbing riser diagram yourself for the first time, because there's no fees for the engineer to do it, or like, you know, like it's too small. So you have to start to learn how to do things yourself a lot. Like I felt, as much as I felt like at ODA, and at ODA I was like, wow, like I'm good, like I'm able to get those facades and everything, but I never realized how much there were so many people around me, like doing, there was a facade consultant, the expediter, the, you know, like just like right. all those people advising, like my like the senior that was like helping. And all of a sudden you're like, whoa, look, this guy, I need to figure it out, right? Like, yeah. just like so. And I think that's a little bit the motto at the office. That's what I tell now. Like we're gonna hire our 10th employee now, 5 years later. And when I say we, it's like us as Reed, my wife Megan Grail has a different office that is about the same size. It's a little bit what I tell everybody. I'm like, it's like, you know, institutional, like the certain way is fine, but we're smaller, where we need to be more agile. We need to, and there's a lot of things we need to just figure it out, you know, like, so like there are different ways to do it. Either you cross-reference with another project or things like that. Like we're still doing that. But yeah, like just learn a lot.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. Do you have ideas about how to improve the architecture profession? I know you do. If you're listening to this podcast, you definitely have ideas about how to improve our profession. NCARB wants to hear from you. Their ongoing analysis of practice study is your opportunity to shape the future of architecture. Share your experiences and insights from working in architecture and tell NCARB what you wish they would do better. This is your opportunity to let NCARB know what you wish they would do better. Your feedback will help guide changes to the National Experience and Examination Programs for Architects and impact what being a licensed architect could look like. Whether you're an architect or you work with architects, NCARB wants to hear from you. Make sure your voice is heard. Contribute to the analysis of practice study today. Sign up at ncarb.org/AOP. That's ncarb.org/AOP. ncarb.org/AOP. This episode is brought to you by FreshBooks. There's a lot to love about being an entrepreneur architect, right? But trying to figure out your financials on your own is not one of those things. Luckily, there's FreshBooks, the all-in-one accounting solution that's built for business owners like us. FreshBooks takes all the not-so-fun parts of running a business, from building and tracking invoices to managing online payments to organizing expenses, and automates them with features like the new digital bills and receipt scanner, saving you up to 11 hours per week in the process. 11 hours. FreshBooks has your back at tax time too. It's almost tax time. With a ton of reports to choose from, you'll know exactly where your business stands, and you can easily hand the keys over to your accountant so they can take over when it's time to reconcile everything for the year. Try FreshBooks. Try FreshBooks for free for 30 days. No credit card required. It's free. Go to FreshBooks.com/architect. FreshBooks.com/architect to get started today. That's FreshBooks.com/architect. So, what will you do with your 11 more hours each week? This episode is brought to you by RCAT.com. We all have that one story, that one project that had such a unique situation that it required a solution that you had rarely considered before. We share these stories in private professional circles with our friends and our colleagues, but there has never been a collection of these stories of conflict and triumph all in one place until now. Detailed is a podcast series that features architects, engineers, builders, and manufacturers who share their insights and expertise as they highlight some of the most complex, interesting, and oddball building conditions that they have ever encountered, and the ingenuity it took to solve them. Join host Charisse Lakeside, aka CSI Kraken, a senior specifications writer at RDH Building Science, as she uncovers lessons learned to help you navigate similar challenges that may arise in your next project. Detailed, an original podcast by ArtCat. Listen and subscribe right now at ArtCat.com/podcast. That's ArtCat.com/podcast. ArtCat.com/podcast. Detailed, every building has a story. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. What type of work did you start when you first launched? What type of work did you do? You know, after you said you were working sort of part-time with your wife and doing some of that work, but once you started doing your own work and bringing in your own projects, what were those projects?
It was residential still. Like I did a lot of residential at ODA New York, and so like that's where I was feeling comfortable.
So residential single family houses or commercial apartments, or
it was more like apartment renovations in the beginning.
So New York City apartments. But
like New York City apartments, yeah.
Yep.
And 95% of the practice is still in New York right now. Like it's like I know like we're trying to do things in Miami a little bit. And we have one project in France that is gonna be long for several reasons. But just like 95% of the, like it's still, what I've been able to port is a little bit the code and things that I learned before from New York City to New York City. That helped me like not having to reinvent everything from zero. But like apartments, fairly quickly, we got our first project, which is in also like a larger project, which is a townhouse in the West Village. It's an old carriage house. And it was, we had everything. We had landmark, change of views, a lot of different things. And just like, so like really good case study. And excuse me, for a lot of reason, that project took 5 years to complete. I'm like, something I'm like, sorry, guys. Yeah. Like,
That's New York City, right? I mean, working in New York City,
it was
layers and layers and layers of regulation.
It was tricky. We would get it like a lot faster done now, but like just like I think we hired like here, like we hired an expediter that was cheap, but like again, like I learned a lot of things because like since he wasn't fully doing what he was supposed to do, I ended up going to the Department of Building with him. And I saw him like beeping the ticket, like beeping his pass, like going to that window, and I was like, actually, I learned through that, and now like a lot of projects, sometimes we're doing our own expediting since through that experience, because that allowed us to propose an attractive package for smaller projects, you know, like just like, if not, like you're like, look, I'm going to be that much, but then there's an expediter, there's that and that, and people at some point are like, look, I have like 100K in budget, and you're telling me like 60% of it is going to be eaten by not construction, like, you know, like, so it's it's true, those experiences, every time something doesn't work and you try to fix and you learn. And so like that becomes one expertise or service that you can provide. And I think in the beginning, that's really how we do love by be able to provide a lot of services, you know, like just like the architect of record, a bit of design, but also some expediting, some sourcing of products, like, you know, like bidding contractors, like just like through all this, there was enough to do.
Yeah.
Like us, you know, like to like, subside a little bit.
And by doing that, you have the opportunity to be able to bring in revenue for each one of those as well, right? So once you start doing some of that expediting work, you can charge for that expediting work. And let me just explain that to the listeners who are listening who don't understand expediters. New York City, working in New York City, the code and the regulation is so complicated that there's an entire layer of code review that is done by the expediters. There's people who understand the New York City system And so architects work with expediters that basically help them get it through the regulation and the code review and all of that, helps them through the process. So as an architect, Combe can learn that process and then be able to provide that service. In addition to his architectural services, he can provide that expediter service as well and not have to charge additional for hiring somebody else, a consultant, essentially, to do that work.
Correct. Yeah. And that helped us on several projects. No, definitely. Like, you know, you do it a couple of times by necessity because, like, hey, I got to figure it out. Like, the guy's not, it doesn't sound like it's moving. And then, like, after, like, you're like, look, like, yeah, instead of hiring this guy, it could be me. And just like, and you learn even more. So, but yeah, like, we've been able to charge a little bit and like grow like that. So, like, I think the trajectory of the office was really to be support of those. And then, like, you know, at some point I was like, look, like, it's been working as support for my wife. Why don't I just expand and try to work with other interior designers? Maybe they have interesting projects as well. And so that's when we started to diversify a little bit. We started to work with this co-living firm called Van City. And they were in Bushwick. They were trying to transform quickly some apartments. We did some sort of a mix of a deli, cafe, like co-working into an old dentist and garage space that we had to change of use. So, like, you know, like, there wasn't like the interior designer that came to us and was like, hey, like, just like, you know, like, we need permits, we need change of use, we need this and that. So, so that's where, like, we brought in a little bit the network through that, like, and you know, at some point we're like, look, like, sometimes we're like, we can do this, but like, we can do design as well, you know, like, which is a little bit the goal at some point. You're like, we can do design as well. And it works out. And, you know, like, sometimes there's this interior designer that like is doing the inside, but like, there's more than just, there's some window extension, things like that. And so we start to design there. And after a moment, once you show quite a few of those projects, we've been able to approach clients and be like, look, like, we can do it all. Like, we can do the architecture of record, the design of the extension, or the change of use. We can also do the design, you know, like, of the interiors and things like that. And when it's not my expertise, I know, for example, like, furnishing is not, it's not my thing. Like, it's not that it's not my thing, but like, it's just like, I feel like I spend a lot of time, the time to and effort to ratio to result versus what I can provide probably on just architecture and layout,
right,
is just not as good, you know, I have to admit it. So like, and then we bring back some people for expertise that we think someone else can do as well. And that was a little bit the struggle. At some point I realized I was like, look, like, just like, we do get this sort of snowball effect because we talk to all those people by being in support. And finally, like, sometimes it turns into larger projects or like the next person calling you. Yeah, like, you did that. Can you do that as well? But also, because at some point we were starting to have this range of services, I was tempted to do it all. But once you do that, you're really on your own. So like, then your network shrinks, you know? Because yeah, like, you stop bringing other people in that could bring you the next project as well. So that was something I realized. I was like, oh, like, if we propose everything all the time, then our snowball effect, you see it. Like, it's like, you're like, a year, it takes time. Like, unfortunately, like, it's like a year later that you realize, like, oh, like, I shouldn't
right,
have done that. And it takes a few months to like recover. But yeah, like, so like, we keep liking collaborating and bring other expertise in what we're doing, and just like, but like, at least now, like, we're trying to also transition away from, in the beginning, we're architect of record that can maybe provide design if you want it. Now we're more like this, we're trying to be more design architect that provide architecture of record for the sake of convenience. And that shift is is what we've been trying to do for the past couple of years.
And you've grown from just you to 10 employees, you said, hiring your 10th?
Yeah. Like now, yeah.
Can we talk about that a little bit? How about the first employee, when you first hired that first employee? Because that's always the hardest one. What was that process like? How did you know that it was the right time? And who did you hire in terms of their role?
So it's a great person. It's Fabian. He's US citizen, like born in Colombia. I almost, I have to be careful if you can listen to the podcast. No, but love him. Like he's been here almost from day one, from the first month. I think he was looking for an architecture job. I think he had a little experience here and there, but just real project development and things like that in New York City, he was almost as new as I was to the apartment renovation thing. To be honest, I do think I hired him. I hired the first person a little bit too early. I should have stayed by myself a little bit longer. Probably the way I see it, staying a little bit with, creating processes and things that explain clearly what needs to be done, things that I never got at my previous firm either, actually. It was a little bit free flow, everything.
Right.
But the margins are so tight when you start that I think you do want to have all your layers, PDF that explains this is what schematic is. This is what
right. All your systems need to be in place. And so when you hired those early employees, the systems weren't really in place yet. And so
no, it wasn't. It wasn't. And I think the issue of that, we went through, but the issue of that is it's quite a bit of salary to have an employee in the beginning, and so. Because of that employee, you start to get more projects to cover you and that employee. And then right. You don't have time to work on the project and on the system to create the project at the same time.
Right.
And I would have really taken more time if I had to redo it, really breathe a little bit and be this stuff. It's good. At that time, I wanted to do the competition and the project that we just got. And helping, I was really trying, and it's the problem in general, but like trying to do all of that because it's exciting and because in a certain way you want to grow and you want to start to create your proof of concepts. I should have just taken this townhouse and did it by myself, and really take the time and really ponder is it the right time for this first person or not? And I think it happened a couple of times in the course of the office where I don't know what people do with 30 or 40 people, I'm not at that stage. I saw it working in my previous firm, but now that I'm the one putting all this together, I'm like, well, it sounds like a lot. Because already I tried to grow a few times and just at some point, I think 2 years ago, 3 years, maybe 2.5 years ago, we had a summer that was really busy, where I started to get, we were 6 or we were 4, and then I got 2 or 3 interns for the summer. And bless everybody, it was great that they came in and paying everybody, Here, it was really hard to manage all the projects. Problem of system, the fee system, it wasn't in place. At the end, you receive more, but just you see the projects not moving forward as much as they should. And because of that, you're on the project and you're not really able to do strategy with a client, be this is additional service, this we shouldn't do, this is not what we agreed with. Really thinking about the structure of the contract as well and why are we doing that? Being too focused on we're going to do this project, it's a great project. If we have it built, at least we can show something. And not instantly, but like it creates a big gap, you know, like you end up with like a big bill at the end of the summer that you, I didn't see it coming at all. So I think like it's like that after like, you know, like we shrink down because like, oh, like a little panic attack. And like now, like I think we're regrowing like in a better way. Now, like I have more, well, Fabian is here and like he's ready to take on like a large project by himself, for example. You know, of course, like it's like, you know, we discussed all the design and all the strategy, but like he's able to run the show and to like really help me. And like, you know, like there's now we have a project manager, like he's not an architect, he's a builder, and he's doing more like construction site management and bidding and things like that. And he's able to pilot a little bit things. So I have more layers of relay now. And so like it's a little bit more sustainable, let's say.
Are you working remotely or are you in a physical office?
We're all remotely now. Yeah.
Is the firm intended to be, are you going to continue that way? Because obviously everybody's working that way pretty much now, but is as you grow, will you continue to remain remote?
I think I would like to have, I think everybody wants to be half-half right nowadays. I have the feeling. They want to, you know, everybody wants to have the freedom to be able to stay a couple of days at home and like just like back at the office. I think we do want to have an office again. Especially it's very hard to welcome new people at the office fully remotely, I feel. Like, you know,
I've heard a lot about that.
It's not for everybody first, I think, because like the more social persons, like they're not going to find exactly what they want into the office. You kind of pass by around and be like, hey, like, do it more like this.
Right.
Like, you know, so like you figure it out, like you find out like 4 days later. And you know, like that thing like went like really, you know, like if you're not attentive, like it happens. So I do think for welcoming new people, it's important to have an office. I really think that also, I kind of miss the energy of, you know, even for the team, like between each other, to have fun, to get to know each other, like to stay a little later, to like explore something, or like there's not this sort of enthusiasm mechanism that works for you either. So I think that part should be reinstated for sure. And like in what form, we still figure it out. Is it just the juniors with like more like a little bit more senior people like passing by, you know, 1 or 2 days a week, like in rotation? So is it, you know, what is it after? Like some people love to be at home. And, you know, after like, you know, like days of savings and not having an office and also like not having people commute back and forth, I think it saves some energy of people. Like it's like, the energy, mental energy is like less stimulated, I think, like to a certain extent. But I think also like people don't have to like go back and forth and like spend like an hour and a half, you know, like, so like maybe they feel like their day is longer. We'll see. But like we were talking about like having an office again, but with Omicron hitting, for those who have an office now, I understand that like you want to go back because you want to use it. You have a lease, like you're paying for it, or you have a negotiation with your landlord, or like you did it on purpose, like that's fine. But like we gave back the keys on March 2020, like when the first wave arrived, we're on the 2 months in an office with two great guys. But like, I was like, hey, like, just like, here are the keys. We don't know when we're going to come back. And those guys were like, it's going to last 2 weeks and come back. Why do you do that? And it lasted a bit longer.
It did. So, it did for sure. Before we wrap things up, because we're coming to the end here, I wanted to go back to the name of the firm. It's spelled R-E-A-D. What's the origin story of the name?
Yeah. So we call it Reed. It came like we're doing a lot of renovation, so I wanted the re in the name. I was like you know, like, and like it was like redesign, reinvent, like we went through a lot of re's. And at the end, I said I like the term re-architecture better than like redesign. I said like that's what's closer to what we we're doing. So we're like read, architecture, design, and like it became as a compression read.
Right.
Which I think is closer to what we want to do as well, like be like very contextual, try to understand, you know, again, like with my, you know, like passion for history and like how things work and like in what context things take place, like it was making sense, like you read the context, like read, like, you know, like just like
yeah,
just like a little bit in mode analysis and reaction mode, you know, like the of what we can do now.
Yeah, I love it. So technically it's re as in renovation and AD as in architecture and design, compress it and it's read, and then there's this context around it from your history and your origin story. Makes total sense. Total sense.
Okay. Why do you think so?
I like
yeah,
it.
Like I've said like it was really hard to find like the website as well. Just like read.com, like go and buy it. Like it's impossible. So
yeah, exactly. Like right. It's just $1 million domain for sure.
It was like, so we found something else, you know, like it works well.
Yeah. Yeah. I also want to ask you the one question that I ask everybody on the show. What is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
Well, for tomorrow, I think we're doing a lot of things in architecture that are interesting, but also I think like it's a good training to do other things through the thinking that we've been taught, the way like the critical thinking that we've been taught. Like, so to do a better business, I actually tried to read books about entrepreneurs, you know, like not architecture at all, like just like entrepreneurs, yeah. Startups. I just like try to understand how they grew their business, not of architecture, like of anything, because I think sometimes like it is a business, you know, like it is a field like that I'm really interested in, but like to make it work, I need my business to work. So that's right. when we had the crash sometimes, I was like, okay, maybe we can, I can extract the architect and be more like the entrepreneur here, because like something is like, you know, like I need to be able to keep on going. So I think look outside of architecture to be a better business person, and then do better architecture through that better business.
Yeah, totally agree. That's my message almost every week, is build a better business first, and then you can be a better architect later.
Yeah, took a few tries. You know, like we're like, it's anyway, it's still challenging, you know, like
it is. It's a very hard business. It's a very difficult business, and it's there's lots of rules to the game. And so, yeah, for sure. I appreciate you for coming by and sharing your story. Colm Menage is his name. The website is re-ad.com, re-ad.com. We'll have links to that on the show notes. You can go check out what Colm is doing. Colm, thank you very much for coming by, sharing your story, your origin story, sharing a little bit of the background of your architecture firm. Very interesting. I appreciate you for coming by and sharing your knowledge at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you, Mark.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a rating, write a review, and share a link to this episode with a friend. That's how Entree Architect will grow to serve thousands more architects just like you. This is our 10th year here at Entree Architect. We launched this thing back in 2012. It is 2022, if you haven't noticed. 10 years ago, we launched this podcast, and it's grown to thousands of architects listening every week because you share this link. EntreeArchitect.com/podcast. Share a link to this episode with a friend. And thanks to our sponsors, RCAT, FreshBooks, and NCARB. We could not do it without you. Thank you for your support. Links to our sponsors and all the resources we discussed today on this episode are available at the show notes for this episode, found at EntreeArchitect.com/podcast. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. If you haven't gone to Gable Media yet, you need to. GableMedia.com is a place for you. It's built for you. It's curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. You are the audience dedicated to building a better world. We built Gable Media for you. Go check it out at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com. And it's official. November 1st through November 3rd, 2022. Add those dates to your calendar, and I will see you at the Entree Architect Community Annual Meeting, the first ever live and in-person conference for you, small firm architects. Visit entrearchitect.com/annual meeting right now to learn more. That's entrearchitect.com/annual meeting. And I will see you in Austin. Thank you for listening today. Thank you for listening every week. I appreciate you coming back and sharing links to this episode. Go do that. This episode, go share it with a friend. Thanks for being here. Love, learn, and share what you know.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.